All right, so tonight we're going to be hopefully finishing to Wise, but it really depends how long I talk. And I'm going to try to leave time for discussion. This is the second time in the 10 years that I've done a lot of meetings, but I skipped to Wise because I didn't think it could help me. You know, you understand, I'm an alcoholic. And so I had old ideas, and Mark said, well, why don't you do to Wise, employers, and family afterwards? And I didn't have a good reason except an old idea, so I decided to do it. We did it last year, and it was great. I got so much out of it. What we're going to read tonight is really the spiritual principles of relationships and the spiritual principles of recovery. And I actually listened to the one I did in July, and I said, wow, that was really good. And I said, God, I hope I can remember all that tonight. And but I do want to apologize. I have allergies, and I can hear me sniffling on the podcast. So forgive me, you know. Don't get a resentment over it. You know, in this, the pages we're going to read, there's one principle after another on how you relate to each other, how you live the spiritual principles. And, you know, it's the last part of the 12th step is we practice these principles in all our affairs, but you don't hear that as a discussion at meetings much. But these chapters, the lost chapters, have a lot of these principles on how we practice with the family and with employers, with our spouses and relationships, and then the vision for you. So we're on page 116, and it's written to Wise, but it's really written to me. And it's written to whoever I'm living with or relating to or trying to have a relationship with, for people that I've had relationships with and I'm trying to rekindle them and make them better. It says, we have elsewhere remarked how much better life is when lived on a spiritual plane. Now, it's not an airplane. You don't get an airplane to take off. It's a plane is a level of existence, a certain way of life. And I think it is much better for me when I lived on a spiritual plane. When I lived on Michael's plane, it didn't work. I was separated from God, and I couldn't fix myself. I couldn't fix the world so I could be okay. It just never worked. And it says, if God can solve the age-old riddle of alcoholism, He can solve your problems too. Now, how does God solve the age-old riddle of alcoholism? How does He do that? Well, He does it because if I'm connected to God and I'm allowing God to work in my life, then I'm not running the show. And then I'm not feeling restless, irritable, and discontented. And God will give me a power so that if I don't feel well and I say, boy, I should get a drink, God will say, bad idea. And He'll also give me directions on how to live. So God solves the age-old riddle of alcoholism by if we allow Him to do it. I said something last year that I hadn't thought of in a while, but what we do is in AA, we put up a mailbox each day. And God will deliver the mail, what we need every day. But we have to put the mailbox up, and we have to leave the door open. If we don't do that, we won't get His power. He'll skip our house. And so God did solve the age-old riddle of alcoholism. He was always there, but remember, we didn't seek Him, and we were separated from Him. And He says He could solve your problems too. So what problems do I have that are different than my alcoholism? What kind of problems? I mean, it says on page 45 that lack of power is my dilemma. I don't have any power to live. And it says we need a power to live, and we're going to seek God. And it says God will solve my problem. The exact words are, I used to know them all, but I'm getting old. It says we had to find a power with which we live. It had to be a power greater than me, right? Anybody agree with that? Obviously, but where in hell was I to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable me to find a power greater than myself, which will solve your problem. So God solves the problem. He's always there, but we've blocked him out, remember? And so when we allow God to work in our lives, he solves our problem. And all of my problems are the result of being separated from God and back in self. I can't think of a problem I had in my life that I didn't cause in some way when I came in here, if you think about it. And I didn't realize that. And it says we have to live a different way, remember? We have to stop playing God. And it says, why? Because it didn't work. And then I realized, you see, I'm slow. I'm not that smart. It took me a while to realize that the reason why playing God didn't work for me is I'm not God. I don't know if any of you, but it just struck me one day. Well, of course it did work. I'm not God. But I was under this illusion my whole life that I could manage well and rest, satisfaction, and happiness out of life. And so when you think about it, we should have all been locked up because we were running around playing God. And we believed it. We didn't know any better, but now we do. And it says, we've found that like everybody else, we were afflicted with pride. So you, people who you're in a relationship, may not be alcoholics in terms of their alcohol intake, but they're afflicted with pride, self-pity, vanity, and all the things which go to make up the self-centered person. So the people you're living with are self-centered too. Everybody is, really. And we were not above selfishness or dishonesty. In fact, what I've come to realize is that we're all self-centered people in the world. And we're all separated from God. And then we have a script which we have for everybody, and they don't have the script. And so if you look at the world, we're in conflict with everybody and everyone. And there's a solution to that, is to find a life centered on God and allow God to work in our lives. And so the people you're living with, they have the same problem. So we can recognize it now. And we could say, well, they're just like we were. And it says in the big book, they were spiritually sick, just like us, right? And so we have to practice the same love and tolerance for them that we want it for ourselves. And so it says, as husbands began to apply spiritual principles in their lives, we began to see the desirability of doing so too. And why not? And if they could see the desirability, if they could see us change. So if you change and they see you're practicing a spiritual life, a different, something's happened to you, they see a personality change, people want to know what you did and they may ask you. That's what we're supposed to do. Somebody asked about getting a sponsor. You're supposed to find somebody that you think has had a personality change who's done from these steps and then find them so they can take you through it. And so we're the best example of whether this works or not. And we're the best example of how it doesn't work if I don't do it. Now, a lot of people say, hey, it doesn't work, but I think it works if you do it. But if you don't do it, it's not going to work. At first, some of us did not believe we needed this help. Does that sound familiar? You know, they're full of selfishness, self-centered. They're upset. They have resentments and anger, but they didn't believe they needed the same help that the alcoholic did. And one of the problems is the people that dealt with us, they focused on us and our problems, and they couldn't see their own problems. And then if we start to practice spiritual principles and they're not, then there's this conflict. And they're going to talk about that. This is really good stuff on relationships. We thought on the whole we were pretty good women, capable of being nicer if our husband stopped drinking. Now I wonder, is that a true statement? That they're going to be nicer if you stop drinking. It makes sense to them, but it's really not true, isn't it? They could be nice anyway. There's no reason why they couldn't be nice. And here's a good one. But it was a silly idea that we were too good to need God. And so who told them that they were too good to need God? Some people probably believe that. I hear a lot of people don't want to hear about God. They come in here. They don't want to hear about God. And it seemed like a silly idea, but who told them it was silly? And does anybody here think that we're too good to need God? You see, that's a delusion too, isn't it? And that's one that'll kill us. Now we try to put spiritual principles to work in every department of our lives. And I wrote here on page, I think it's 52 or 53, it says the question, God is everything or God is nothing. And are we putting that idea into every area of my life? In other words, if I go to work, am I giving God work? Or am I managing work? Am I giving God money or am I managing money? Am I giving God my family? and I'm managing how they should be. You see, if I'm managing any area of my life, then it's not going to work. And so the spiritual principles have to be applied in every area of our lives. And remember, we give God everything, right? And we want Him to be in charge of our lives, but He can't be in charge of something if I'm still managing it. Something that people don't realize, you can only have one manager. And so what you're managing, if you're managing that area, God can't manage it. And it always is clear to me when I'm managing and things aren't going well and I'm disturbed, and I usually have fear. I don't know if anybody can relate to that. And it says when we do that, we find it solves our problems too. So here are some of our problems. Lack of fear, ensuing lack of fear, so we were full of fear. Anybody have that? Anybody have a lot of it? We talked about terror today. The four horsemen of the apocalypse. And one of them is terror. And I hadn't really thought of it. My fear was terror. It was just terror. Worry and hurt feelings is a wonderful thing. So if we practice spiritual principles, and if we have God operating our lives, then we have lack of fear, worry, and hurt feelings. And that's what we talk about in the Ninth Step Promises, right? And it says, we urge you to try our program, for nothing will be so helpful to your husband as the radically changed attitude toward him, which God will show you how to have. So here they're talking about how anybody is changed. What happens? What's the spiritual awakening? Well, now have a radically changed attitude towards people, which God will show me how to have. I change the way I see things. And so he's going to have a... if you have a radically changed attitude towards your husband, things will go better. Or if you're the wife to each other, if you're in a relationship. And the changed attitude is one of love and tolerance, right? Love, patience, kindness, and tolerance. If you and your husband find a solution for the pressing problem of drink, you are, of course, going to be very happy. But they're just talking about if you're sober, but all problems will not be solved at once. Sobriety is not enough. Remember, the man comes out of the tornado and he sees that everything's wrecked, and he says, "Gee, Ma, you know, sun's shining." And you hear a lot of people come to AA, they're 30 days sober, and they say, "Why are people still giving a hard time? I haven't had a drink for 30 days." But sobriety is really not enough. We want emotional sobriety, right? We want a relationship with our Creator. We want to have peace. We want to be able to be the person God created. And just stopping drinking means you're sober. And somebody said, "Son of a bitch, everything's real." And sober is really when alcoholism is. When we drink, it's a solution to our alcoholism. But that didn't work either. That caused us a lot of problems. But sober is when we have alcoholism. We're irritable, restless, discontented, remember? And unless we can find the ease and comfort of the next drink, we can't live. We can't live in the world without our spiritual malady being resolved. It says, seed has started to sprout in a new soil, but growth has only begun. Now, they talk about the roots of our problem. Is selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of my problem? Anybody think that was true for them? Still true for me today. So the root of my problem is my selfishness, self-centeredness. And what I've always said is that it's in the wrong soil. So I plant my tree in this soil, and it's called Michael's soil. And it's self-centered soil. And that tree comes up out of the ground, and it's on the leaves and on the branches, it's filled with resentment and fear and shame and guilt. It looks pretty bad. So that's how my life looked. That's how my tree looked when I came in here. And so what we're doing here is we're putting our roots in a different soil. It's God's soil. And when I do that, the tree looks really good. You know, the branches are filled with love, patience, and tolerance. So, and each day you have to decide, what do you want your tree to look like? And then at the end of the night, when you do your review, you could say, how'd my tree do today? What kind of tree did I produce? In spite of your newfound happiness, there will be ups and downs. Many of the old problems will still be with you. This is as it should be. And I wrote, that's why we have step 10. That's why we have the steps. So we could try to live in the world of the Spirit each day. It says, the faith and sincerity of both of you and your husband will be put to the test. Sincerity is the quality of being free from pretense. And how is it put to the test? And it says, these workouts should be regarded as part of your education, for thus you will be learning to live. When we talk about the end of page 80, it says God disciplines us, remember? And how does he discipline us? Well, he gives us tests when we separate from him. We don't feel good, right? And we have angry and we're fearful and we have shame and guilt, we harm people. And we have to learn when we're disturbed, right, that there's something wrong with me. Well, what's wrong with me? Well, I'm disturbed because I'm separated from God and I'm seeing it through Michael's glasses, not God's glasses. And when I do that, I need to get back to him, right? I just wrote a thought. I don't know if anybody read it. Probably didn't. But it was on how we get back to the being, how we stay connected to God in the world of the spirit. And it's about turning. We have to constantly turn towards God and away from ourselves. So we have spiritual exercises that we use all day because we separate from God. And then we don't feel good. We all do it. Because it says, watch for selfishness, desires, resentment, fear, right? When these crop up each day, we ask God at once to remove them. And we're going to be talking about that on Saturday, page 84. It says, you will make mistakes, but if you are earnest, they will not drag you down. Instead, you will capitalize them. Well, we learn from our mistakes, right? We're supposed to inventory at night. And then we ask God's forgiveness and we're corrective measures. We never become perfect here. We're just trying to grow spiritually, make progress down the spiritual path. And it says a better way of life will emerge. So it kind of emerges. You get on a better path when you start to overcome these constant barriers that you put between you and God. And some of the snags you encounter are irritation, hurt feelings, and resentments. Well, that's a nice way of saying it. You're pissed off all the time. And you're irritated. Hurt feelings. Hurt feelings are a killer for an alcoholic because our hurt feelings are always justified, right? They're always real. They're always true. I thought that, but that's not true now. And we get our feelings hurt. We don't like that. And so that was one of the reasons we drank, and that's one of the reasons why we had resentments and irritated. And your husband will sometimes be unreasonable and you want to criticize. Anybody have that in a relationship? You think the other person's unreasonable and you want to criticize. And you know what I thought about? Well, I decide they're unreasonable. And they think I'm unreasonable. So you got two people thinking the other one's unreasonable. And those kind of point of views, it's not going to work. And I'm unreasonable, I want to criticize. Anybody here judge people and give advice and tell them how they should be? And, you know, if I do that at home, it doesn't go well. And not at all. And I don't like to do it. I don't want to be that way. And so starting from a speck on the domestic horizon, great thunderclouds of dispute may gather. So, you know, it could be something like, I didn't close the garage door, you know, right, or something. And then the next, you know, I'm just, anyway, I'm probably the only person that had that experience. Great thunderclouds of dispute may gather. These family dissensions are very dangerous, and I wrote to everybody, especially your husband. You don't want to live in a battle zone anymore, because I don't know, we alcoholics, a lot of us lived in battle zones, and I don't want to do that anymore. I want to have peace and serenity, and I get the most peace and serenity depending on what I bring into it, because I'm the only person that can bring peace and serenity. I don't have to get disturbed, and people are just who they are, and they're going to talk about that in the next few paragraphs. They're going to give us some really good advice. Often you must carry the burden of avoiding them or keeping them under control. Never forget that resentment is a deadly hazard to an alcoholic. Well, it's a deadly hazard to anybody. And if you see people aren't alcoholics and they have resentments, try to get between them and their resentment. It's not a good situation. We do not mean that we have to agree with your husband whenever there is an honest difference of opinion. And what they're trying to tell you here is that things are not going to be easy at first, and maybe for a while, and people are kind of walking on eggshells, and they don't want to disturb the alcoholic, but, you know, that's a hard way to live. So it says, just be careful not to disagree in a resentful or critical spirit. So I wrote, disagree, and I wrote, I could reevaluate my position, so I don't have to disagree. Who tells me I have to disagree with him? You know, and why do I have to do that? And so I need to change my point of view. And even if I don't, it's not a situation that I would handle a certain way. I never have to be resentful or critical. I'm the only person that chooses that. And when I do that, you know what I get back? I get resentment and criticism. I think the theme of this is whatever you bring into the relationship, you get out of it. And you and your husband will find that you dispose of serious problems easier than you can the trivial ones. Next time you and he have a heated discussion, no matter what the subject, now this is really a good paragraph, it should be the privilege of either of you to smile and say, this is getting serious. I'm sorry I got disturbed. Let's talk about it later. Now I read that, and the first time I read it, I said, this is getting serious. I'm sorry you were disturbed. Let's talk about it later. And I was, yeah, I mean, sorry you're disturbed. Anybody else see that? Well, guess what? I'm disturbed. Because I'll say, boy, this is getting serious. I'm sorry you're disturbed. And get over it. You know, well, that never worked. But I'm disturbed. And then I need the pause, remember? Whenever I'm disturbed, I need to pause and ask God for the right thought or action. And I like that. So they're saying, pause. Don't get into it. If your husband is trying to live on a spiritual basis, he will also be doing everything in his power to avoid disagreement or contention. And here's what I wrote. I wish I practiced it. I should never have a position. I shouldn't have a position. I should just look at the situation and not have a position going into it. Because then when I have a position, then I'm putting myself in the situation of being upset with the other position. And I wrote that here, and I'm going to try to remember that. Whenever I have a position, then I'm deciding how things should be. And I'm deciding whether they're doing it the way I want it to do. Your husband knows he owes you more than sobriety. He wants to make good. Yet you must not expect too much. Now here's a really good paragraph. It says, his ways of thinking and doing are the habits of years. And, you know, we talk about steps 6 and 7. You are what you practice. If you practice selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, fear, that's you. And you want to practice love and tolerance and patience and kindness, and that's a different way. You have to learn a new way of reacting. And the person, the wife, has habits of thinking and doing for years. And so we all do, and we have to change, and we all have to move from the left-hand side of the car to the right-hand side. And be the person God created. And he goes in more detail. He says, patience, tolerance, understanding, love are the watchwords. I mean, that should be our attitude. That's what we should be trying to do and bring. So if I'm not being patient, tolerant, understanding, and loving, then I need to stop. And if I bring patience, tolerance, understanding, and love into a situation, I'll get it out of it. And so I have to remember that. Show him these things in yourself and they will be reflected back to you from him. That's just what I said. If I show things, these qualities in me, I'll get that back. If I show anger, resentment, or bitterness, I'm going to get that back. And then I'll present that, and then they're angry or bitter, and I say, well, why are they like that? What's that all about? Anybody else do that? And then, oh my, they're being unreasonable. Look at the way they're treating me. You know, it goes on and on. And it's just a ridiculous way of living, and I don't want to do it anymore. Doesn't mean we don't start, but we can stop now. So these are really good paragraphs. Show them these things, and live and let live is the rule. If you both show a willingness to remedy your own defects, there will be little need to criticize each other. And I read that wrong, too. I said if you both show a willingness to remedy their defects, there will be little need to criticize each other. Remember that famous chapter on alcoholic addict doctor. He says the more he saw his wife's defects, the bigger they became. Mm-hmm. And the more he stopped doing that and saw her good qualities, the more they grow. And I think that's the key. You know, we have a saying, the guys that I've worked with, you know, it's just who they are. You know, I say, how's it going with so-and-so? Well, it's just who she is. We are who we are. We have to accept people as they are. We have to be considerate. We all have our personalities. And so it says, we women, I love this one, we women carry with us a picture of the ideal man, the sort of chap we would like our husbands to be. Now there's a problem, because then somebody's deciding how you should be perfect and how you should be. And it's their decision on that. So of course you're going to fall short of that. And then they decide this idea of theirs, how you're supposed to be, and you don't measure up to it, and you're the bad guy. Now maybe they could change their idea, and they could be open-minded about it. And it says, if the most natural thing in the world, once his liquor problem is solved, to feel that he will now measure up to that cherished vision. I mean, really, this is asking for trouble, you know? And sure, we all want to look good and be nice and loving, but we have to accept people for as they are. And I think the thing I learned from doing my relationship inventory and they say write a sane sex ideal was I have to allow people to be who they are. And I have to love them for who they are, and I have to bring certain things into the relationship and not have expectations. It says the chances are he will not be not for like him yourself. He is just beginning his development. Be patient. Patient and tolerant. Love and tolerance. That's our code, right? And they say on page 83, we should ask God to show us the way of patience, love, tolerance, and kindness with the family. Each day we should ask God for that. It says, and I wrote, he or she is who they are, and accept people as they are. And learn to look for the good qualities and be grateful for what you have than what you don't have. Another feeling we're very likely to entertain is one of resentment. The love and loyalty could not cure our husbands of alcoholism. Well, yeah, because they had no power, right? And so they're resentful for that, but they have to understand that they were powerless. And they couldn't change any of it. We do not like the thought, listen to this, that the contents of this book or the work of another alcoholic has accomplished in a few weeks that for which we struggled for years. And the more they struggled, the more frustrated they get. And so that's why they have Al-Anon. Because people who have lived with us, they get very disturbed too. And they develop patterns of living and thinking that's not good for them, and they have to learn a different way, just like we do. And it says, at such moments, we forget that alcoholism is an illness over which we could not possibly have any power. And that's true for everyone involved, with us or us with them. We're in a situation which we're powerless. Your husband will be the first to say it was your devotion and care which brought him to the point where he could have a spiritual experience. I don't know, it's probably true. I don't know if it was true in my case. I think it brought me to a non-spiritual existence. But if people have hung around with us, they really been through the ringer. And so we have to understand that and be very kind and loving to them. Without you, you would have gone to pieces long ago. When resentful thoughts come, try to pause and count your blessings. That's true of everything, every day. When resentful thoughts or envy come, to pause and count my blessings. After all, your family is united, alcohol is no longer a problem, and you or a husband are working together towards an undreamed of future. In fact, it says when you look back, the things that came when you put yourself in God's hands are better than anything you could have planned. And it says attitude of gratitude. And then I'm just going to read a few more sentences and quit. Still another difficulty is they become, they're jealous of the attention we bestow on other people, especially alcoholics. You've been starving for his companionship, yet he spends long hours helping other men and their families. You feel he should now be yours. You see? So people who live with us, they get a selfish view. They want us to be a certain way. They should be happy we're working with others and sober. And look at it differently. It depends how you look at things, depending how you feel about it. The fact is that he should work with other people to maintain his own sobriety. We talk about that all the time. Sometimes he'll be so interested he becomes really neglectful, but they're making a point here. You have to have balance. And you still have relationships, and you have children, and you have responsibilities. Your house is filled with strangers. You might not like some of them. He gets stirred up about their troubles, but not all about yours. It will do little good if you point that out and urge more attention for yourself. We find it a real mistake to dampen his enthusiasm for alcoholic work. We should join his efforts as much as you possibly can. We suggest that you direct some of your thoughts to the wives of his new alcoholic friends. You know, this is a time when the wives went to the meetings before the men did. And the families went to the AA meetings, and they were very close-knit. And it wasn't until 1938 or so that Lois started taking the women upstairs or in the other room. And they were all in this together. They need the counsel of a woman who has gone through what you have. And I wrote, turn your thoughts to those you can help. Get out of self. So I don't know, I'm gonna stop here. We got some time. And I thought there's really a lot of information here. I don't know if I did it justice, but it's still good. And if you're new, you might want to read this with your wife. And you could, somebody laughed. All right, maybe wait a while. It's tough because if you've been in a relationship and you quit drinking and you're still in that relationship, that's a tough time for everybody. So anyway, okay.